This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Coming up on today's show, GTA 6 has been leaked, Diablo 4 has been leaked again, and NVIDIA dropped some new hardware. Welcome to another episode of the What's Good Games podcast, your source for video game news, commentary, analysis, and funny stuff every Friday. I'm Andrea Renee, joined by one, Rihanna Manuel Pena. Welcome back.
Hello. Thank you.
Good to see you. Looking frolicious today. I love it.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Brittany, once again, took a sip of whiskey during the intro and made a wonderful face. Brittany Brombacher,
hey!
Everybody.
Hey, what's up?
Hey. Back up in the Pacific Northwest, and we are joined by a fantastic special guest, the one and only Steve Spahn is here.
I don't have a drink. Darn it.
I also don't have a drink, so but cheers to you, Brittany, and cheers to you. So Steven Spahn, for those who aren't familiar, is the face of Able Gamers, a fantastic group that is making video games more accessible for people who have disabilities, but also making game developers more aware of all the tools that they could be using to make their games more accessible. So kind of a two-pronged approach. But Steve, we are excited that you are here today. I was just streaming with you a couple of days ago on your channel for your big 42nd birthday.
Woo! It's me, old, yay.
Happy birthday.
You don't sound so excited about being old.
It depends what time of the day it is. If I'm trying, I missed the days of getting carded. That was great. So,
Man, those days are over for me too, man.
I don't believe that.
That's too bad. I just got carded the other day.
Oh, that must have felt good.
Wow.
Every time somebody asks for my ID when I buy a restricted product, I say, thank you. God bless you.
You made my day.
For asking for my identification. But we are glad that you're here. You had kind of a big month, Steve. You were on a roll doing all kinds of streams and all kinds of public appearances because you were on a mission to raise a crazy amount of money.
Yep. Every September since the 2020 years, I've been doing an event called Spahn Together, where I basically rally the internet to try to raise $1 million for Able Gamers to be able to keep doing the mission of helping people game. And, it's a hard year. There's a lot of people who are in tough financial straits, but so far we're up to a little over $400,000.
Wow.
Wow. Amazing.
Amazing indeed. That is phenomenal. I don't know how you do it. I get tired just watching you tweet as much as you do, if I'm being honest.
there was a guy on one of the streams I visited the other day, and he did the normal thing every streamer does of, yo, I'm so glad to see you here. Nice to, Steve, the guy who started this, yada, yada, and then said all the nice things everybody does. And then he goes into, man, I just want to say thank you because, I know it's really hard to do all this, and I can't believe you have the strength to keep sending out those messages. I swear to God, I almost cried. I was like, somebody recognize this. Aww. Isn't easy.
Yeah, we were just talking about that before we started recording, on how just being a content creator by itself, which you are, is exhausting physically and mentally. And then on top of that, you're running this amazing charity, you're doing all these developer initiatives, and you somehow find time to play games with friends, and then you sleep maybe an hour or two a night?
Well, I don't have a baby, so that helps. when I get one of those, it's all over. But that's same as y'all do. It's just a matter of prioritizing your time and trying to keep the burnout away. And, before all the, whatever Twitch drama is happening lately, the other thing before that was people going through burnout. And it's not something we talk a lot about in the industry, but, it's something that every content creator fights. And I think it's just important that we always remind people that it's pretty normal to feel in this industry.
Oh, thank you.
Absolutely.
I needed to hear that
100%.
Myself.
Yeah, it's one of those things I think we as content creators don't stop to acknowledge and don't give ourselves enough breaks because the demand for performing is ever present. And it feels like the next thing is always right around the corner if you're not constantly pushing the envelope that you're going to miss it, you know? And none of us want to miss anything, but at the same time, you know, I got to take care of you as well. So hopefully you're finding some time to do that, you know, this month, even though you're obviously taking time to hang out with us to do our show, which we're going to get into. And we're going to chat more with Steve about what he's been up to a little bit later on in the show. I want to say thank you to this month's Patreon producers, Chewy's Godson, Alex Agopoulos, Ferris Atia, Justin Foshi, and Punctified. And Punctified, a really funny thing happened as I hovered over your name in our show notes. Google Docs wanted to autocorrect it to Functified.
Ooh, I like that.
Oh.
Which, if you're ever looking for an alternate moniker, apparently Google thinks Functified is the way to go.
Become Functified or something. Yeah.
I like it.
It's the next evolution. Yeah.
And welcome to our Patreon community, MJ3. If you guys want to support our voices in video games, patreon.com/whatsgoodgames is the place to do it. And Brittany, we got some really lovely new reviews as well.
We do. Shout out to Ed Garza, 88, Backlook Cinema, and Gideo Says. Again, it really means a lot to us when we see these reviews. We talked about it last week. We got a really, really kind review from someone where our podcast helped introduce her to the world of video games. And she was able then to kind of chat about them with her husband and be a part of, you know, like that hobby of his. And now they share it together. And it's really these kind messages. You know, we were just talking about burnout. You know, sometimes it just gives you that little extra push you need. It gives you that little motivation. You know, it brings me to my desk every week so I can give Andrea friendly shit about stuff because I love her so much. You know, it's my love language.
Oh. What would I do without all of the ribbing from Brit?
You miss it.
Only be sad.
Yeah. You'd be so sad.
Definitely wouldn't laugh as much, that's for sure. Speaking of laughing, I posted a clip on my Twitter feed this week, if y'all missed it, from a Patreon exclusive after hours stream that Brittany and I did last year. And I was going through one of What's Good's old hard drive folders, like trying to clear out some old files. And I saw this file and I was like, what was that? And I watched it and I was like, this is amazing. We clearly had done the happy hour stream right before because we were very tipsy during that podcast. And I decided to try out a bunch of voice mods on this voice mod system that John installed on the computer, and hilarity ensued. So if you missed it, check it out.
Oh man, was that the one where you had the big demon funny voice?
Yes.
Oh, that made me poo. That was bad.
Yes. Maybe it'll make an appearance during the show sometime. Who could say? Mm-hmm. Thank you to HelloFresh for sponsoring this episode. We'll tell you more about them in just a little bit. But for now, let's jump into the news because, boy, oh, boy, there was a couple big stories. I mean, last week, there was some massive news happening coming out of TGS. But this week's news is not as positive, but probably arguably bigger. Uh-huh. So I'm sure y'all saw that GTA 6, Grand Theft Auto 6, the upcoming game that Rockstar Games has acknowledged is in development, had over 90 video clips leaked online via a hacker. And it was probably the biggest breach of video game clips that I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
And hearing that it was GTA 6 when this news first broke, I was shocked because we just talked about how Take-Two has infamously strict codes around security, and even when we get to pre-release code, which is very rare, by the way. Rockstar just does not do previews. That's just not what they do. They're like, our games are good. You're going to buy them. We don't need to show it to press ahead of time. But when they do it, it's a really small group of press. And I know Alana Pierce had mentioned the lengths she had to go to when she was previewing Red Dead Redemption 2. And we went through something very similar where the legal agreement they send you that you have to agree to in order to get code ahead of launches is wild. So to hear this happen was like, kind of like, okay, this is crazy. So the story, this write-up comes from Polygon. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but essentially they confirmed that they suffered a network intrusion over the weekend, and more than 90 clips of the in-development game were published on a Grand Theft Auto forum and is considered one of the largest leaks in video game history. So they posted a response on Twitter. The response says, we recently suffered a network intrusion in which an unauthorized third party illegally accessed and downloaded confidential information from our systems, including early development footage for the next Grand Theft Auto. At this time, we do not anticipate any disruption to our live game services nor any long-term effects on the development of our ongoing projects. We are extremely disappointed. I love the use of that phrase. Extremely disappointed.
Sorry, Dad.
Right, exactly. To have any details of our next game shared with you in this way. Our work on the next Grand Theft Auto game will continue as planned and we remain as committed as ever to delivering an experience to you, our players, that truly exceeds your expectations. We will update everyone again soon, and of course, we'll properly introduce you to this next game when it is ready. We want to thank everyone for their ongoing support through this situation.
Yeah, damn. Nope. You know,
it's a bummer.
It's a bummer for multitude of reasons, but I think the most fascinating, there's a lot of things that are fascinating about this, but what I was really surprised by was just the reaction to this, particularly from fans of Rockstar Games. It blows my mind how many folks just aren't aware of the game development process. And when we say that it's a miracle that games get made in the first place, you know, we're not being cheeky and silly. It's a very, very complicated process. There are so many moving parts, so many intricate details that you don't think of. And I only saw a few photos from this leak. I didn't know there were 90 videos until I read this article. That's just mind-blowing. But from what I did see, obviously, you know, you're seeing a game in a very early development process, and you're probably, there's no context to any of this. So you don't really even know what you're looking at. And just to see the way some people reacted to this, they're like, oh, it looks so bad. It looks so unfinished. Look at the way that person's walking.
Except it didn't look bad. It looked really freaking good.
Well, if you know.
Considering where they're at in development.
That's it.
It looked amazing.
Yeah. No, I mean, and that's the thing, is that's what people don't understand, right? They see this and they think this is what the game's going to look like when it comes out, like, in years. I don't know. It just goes to show we have a really long way to go. And this is probably a conversation for a different time, but it makes me wonder, how do you remedy this? In a sense of, how do you open up the doors and show folks, like, hey, this is how games are made. This is why it's a really convoluted, intricate process that you just have to understand. It all works out in the end. Sometimes it doesn't, let's be real. Yeah, so I don't know. It was just really interesting, and it really opened my eyes. And man, there's just so many people out there who just don't have an idea of all the work that goes into a game, especially on the scale of Grand Theft Auto 6.
I think one thing that would help, Britt, and you ask a really important question, like, how do we fix this, right? How does the audience become more familiar with what games look like as they're in development? And it's hard, right? Because on one hand, you don't want to show a game before it's ready. You don't want to show it and give a bad impression, which is why this is such a monumental leak for Rockstar. But at the same time, it's really important for people who are enthusiasts, right? Like the diehards, the people who are searching for all of these 90 clips online, to understand what they're actually seeing, right? Like, as you all know, like as everybody in this call knows, games in development are rarely done visually, and they are rarely fun when you play them, honestly. Like, it's still testing out mechanics. Like, things aren't final, everything's broken. Like, it's not a playable game yet because it's not done, right? So it's like asking somebody, like, hey, how does my cake taste? And it's just flour and eggs. It's not great, you know what I mean?
Like,
it's just
analogy.
The pieces that go into it. Yeah, so, like, maybe there's a moment once a game is released to, like, see the concept art, which is always beautiful, but then also some of the prototypes, which are broken and janky. And maybe there's a story to be told there. I know Reb Valentine tweeted also, I think earlier today, hey, devs, my DMs are open. Like, tell me what games look like 2 years before they're ready. Like, show me pictures if you can. And Ariel Knight, who made Arrow Knights Never Yield, replied, and the 2 years before and when it was at release looked very, very different. And of course, people who have seen game dev in progress know this, but it's hard for the public to really understand what a product looks like before it's even close to being shipped.
Steve, you see games in progress all the time.
You know, the problem that I think we're going to continue to face is that the developers don't want to show things early, because if they do, they get harassment and death threats because it's not exactly what the public wanted. But then we get the finished product and people are upset because it took forever to get there. So the gamer audience has really put developers into a corner where it's really hard to win the scenario here. So you see a game early, and there's so many NDAs of games I've seen, and y'all have seen games early too. So yeah, it's just gray building blocks. There's no color. There's no video game there. It's literally you walk through. They've got placeholders there where it says funny comment here or voice line there. And you have to just imagine what it's going to look like. And the GTA 6 leak was so far ahead of that, that you know that means that if that's their early build, and what they're actually going to come out with is going to be great. But you still have people on the internet who are like, I could do this better because me and my auto mechanic job, I know what developers really need to do. And it's like, you know, you don't. And so in my section of the world where I fight for the accessibility more than just the development, it's I run into the same thing constantly where people just know that they know better than the people who do it for years. And I don't know how you fight that kind of attitude.
I think you kind of have to just ignore it, knowing that you're doing innovative work and that your previous game sold over 100 million copies, I think over 130 million copies. So they're fine. I think, you know, devs are always going to take it personally, just like we as creators also take it personally when people attack us, even if we know that we do good work. It still hurts when people attack you, right? And all I hope is that the team at Rockstar can bounce back from this and say, hey, you know what? I'm going to dust it off. Going to just keep going, knowing that our game is going to be amazing. And all you have to do is look at previous work from the studio to know that GTA 6 is going to probably be everything and more once they finally do intend to show it. So just another quick blurb about this, surprising no one, the FBI is looking into this hack because the hacker, who I'm not going to name because they can go fuck themselves, also hacked some other big people in the industry, not in the video games industry, I should say, in the just general corporate world dealings. So if you want to learn more about what's happening with the hacker, you can go look it up on your own. But I would encourage you not to, because why? Yeah. Don't give them any more clicks. Speaking of hackers, that's not why Diablo 4 was leaked on the internet. Instead, it was one of their own employees getting completely like thrown under the bus by a friend. So let me tell you guys about the Diablo 4 leak. So this actually isn't the first leak. Diablo 4 has had a couple other problems happen earlier on in the summer, but they had some footage which appears to have originated from the ongoing Friends and Family beta version of the game, labeled a private test build, leaked on Reddit with 43 minutes of gameplay footage that was uploaded. So it looks like somebody recorded their friend playing as they were streaming to a private chat in Discord. Which to me sounds like, hey, bro, we were supposed to be just playing Diablo together, and instead you recorded it and then had the gumption to post it online when the build clearly has watermarks all over it. The GTA build had a bunch of, you know, identifiers as well, but this one very clearly had watermarks stamped all over the footage. And it's like, how dumb are you to think that no one's going to find you? That's literally the reason why it's watermarked. So that also happens. So I feel bad for the team of Blizzard who's like, listen, we're trying to do some testing so that when the game launches, it's not super broken.
Oh, man.
people just keep screwing it up. But the good news is that a closed beta is coming soon and public tests are coming in early 2023. That's the actual news from this week.
Yay!
So Blizzard Entertainment announced that they're going to be hosting the beta for the role-playing game. The confidential closed beta test is going to be playable in 2022 on PS4, PS5, PC, Xbox One, and Series X. And then the public testing phase, open to all, they said, is slated for early 2023. As we know, the game is going to be coming out in late 2023, hopefully, fingers crossed. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I'm excited for Diablo because when we got that last big drop of information, what was that, Summer Game Fest? It looked so good.
That looks so good. I'm really looking forward to that one. Oh, next year. Oh, it's going to be so good. Next year gaming.
I might even play this one, and I'm not a Diablo girly, so I'm excited.
Okay.
Are you a Diablo girly, Steve?
I am such a Diablo girly. One of my favorites. I love Diablo 2. Diablo 3 took a strange turn, but I still played the crap out of it. And I'd definitely say it's probably the number one game other than Starfield that I'm looking forward to right now. It's just getting back into the Diabloverse.
Too many RPGs next year.
A lot.
Someone,
so many.
Who's got time? We just talked about it. We don't have time in the day, but we're going to definitely play Diablo, and maybe we can all play together. That could be fun.
It's weird. So I love positivity. My favorite thing is a friend of mine named Casey tweeted out just saying, basically, I wish game developers would just stop publishing games for like 6 months so I could catch up. And it was so refreshing, especially when you're someone like me who has so many streamer friends. It's like everyone's like, there's such a drought. There's nothing to play. I'm like, bro, dude, there's like 9 games out a week. What are you talking about? Just the drought. Yeah, okay.
The drought. Now, is that because they only want to play certain games? No, I'm very out of touch with streamer culture. I'll admit that. I'm a crusty old woman who likes to be alone. Is it mostly because folks just want to play the most popular thing, right? So to them, it's a drought? Or is it, like, why would you consider? I can't imagine drought and video game industry going hand in hand.
You know, I've never figured out that kind of either. It seems to be, it's weird. Q3 is where all the developers are holding for Q4 Christmas releases. And so all the ones that have been super hyped up and the audiences are like, when are you going to play this game? Those are still 2 months out. And so the ones that their audiences are demanding, those are not ready to play yet. But then there's all these other games and they're like, I'm going to go back and play this other game called Skyrim for the 95th time.
Because why not? Yep. Play it on your Alexa, apparently.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy. I'm with you, Steve. I think it's refreshing when people acknowledge that there's good games coming out all the time, because it's true. And my backlog also could use a break. If we just didn't publish video games for a full year, I still would never be able to catch up,
honestly.
I went back and played the one that Andrea and I premiered over at Gamescom, where it was the little city sim where you play on the back of a dragon dinosaur that's a living mountain. And it's so much fun.
Oh, yes.
It's really good. And it's, yeah, I don't ever play those. Like, we'll do a game, and then I completely forget it exists because you're showing it off in the early build, and then when the time comes out, you forget about it. And I was like, this one's actually really great. And, like, I was super happy we got to see it early because it was really good.
I remember hearing about that one. That sounded totally like my jam. I'm trying to remember what the name of it was.
A Wandering Village.
Ah! Okay.
Nice.
There you go. He had it ready.
And that brain, that big brain of yours, sir.
No, it's more like my email was open. But yeah,
you know, you could have just taken the compliment.
Right. Big brain. That's it. Wink. Cut that, editor. Thank you.
So the next story I wanted to include, even though fans of our show know we don't typically cover a lot of hardware news because we're just not big gearheads over here. But it's kind of a big deal that NVIDIA has announced the RTX 4090 and the 4080 graphics cards plus DLSS3. So there's a lot of words in this article that are words.
A lot of words.
That's
so many words. So
don't sound like words.
So many English.
So I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I pulled it up from Eurogamer. There's several sites on the internet that do really great hardware deep dives, but I just pulled this up for some of the basics. So the 4090 24 gigabyte version will be available on October 12th, so happening very soon, and is going to cost $1,600, so $1,599, while the RTX 4080 16 gigabyte arrives in November and is going to cost $1,200. So I love that NVIDIA is like, you know what? Chip shortage, whip shortage. We're just going to keep putting things out. And I am glad that, you know, there isn't the crazy aftermarket markup that was happening at the beginning of the pandemic, where getting graphics cards and all their kinds of computer parts seemed to be just wildly overpriced. But
that 3080 rush was wild.
Yes. Well, if people would just stop mining for crypto, we would probably not have this problem anymore. Just one of many reasons. So, Steve, you are a big PC gamer, obviously. I would love to hear from you what you think about when you hear news like this. Does it blow your skirt up, or are you like, man, I don't really care about the latest and greatest. If my machine works, it works. Like, I don't know. What kind of a PC gamer are you?
I mean, it's one of those things where you got to check your own privilege. I'm often, you know, like, my current rig is sponsored by Origin, so they just throw PCs at me, so I get to just be like, yay, new stuff. As far as just upgrading, to me, it feels like the era of when you had to upgrade to the newest card in order to play the newest game is kind of over. Now it feels like you really got a good 3 to 4 years before you're like, oh, can't handle this anymore. And honestly, even at that, usually it's I can't run this game and stream at the same time. That's when I know my card is getting older. So, you know, for people who aren't trying to stream while they're playing, I feel like, you know, nowadays, NVIDIA is never going to sponsor me. You can pretty much just buy a card and then just wait 5 years before you buy another one. But
or just run two PCs.
And do that too, unless they sponsor What's a Good Game. In that case, buy it every year, everybody, every single year. Buy a new one.
Well, we've worked with both the wonderful folks at NVIDIA and at AMD. In fact, each of our production PCs, one has NVIDIA and one has an AMD card in it. So we're, you know, equal opportunity lovers of graphics hardware here. But I think it's a really valid thing that you said, though, this idea that this race to always get the fastest, most powerful piece of gear is just not as necessary because of the different ways that you can optimize your systems, the ways that you can customize it, but also how I think the launchers are becoming way more friendly towards different types of hardware sets, which I think is the most important thing for gamers. And as you mentioned, accessibility for people of all different budgets, right? Like, not everybody gets to have, you know, Big Daddy Origin throwing them PC parts all the time.
That's right. Screw those guys.
But I think it's really interesting to watch. And I always have this section of people that I follow on Twitter who always get whipped up into a frenzy whenever the new stuff is announced. And I think it's really impressive what high-end computers can do, but there's just too many drivers. I can't install all these things.
I'm guessing y'all covered when GeForce Now came out. That was such a game changer, the fact that you can log into GeForce's cloud-based service. And there's so many streamer friends I've got that are just streaming from their laptops now on these high-end games because they're just in the cloud. They don't need the hardware to work on their end. It's up in the cloud now, and you can stream while you're doing it. And it's, you know, it's really amazing technology we live in now.
It's interesting that you bring that up because I think people sometimes forget that GeForce Now was really the first to the cloud gaming scene, while Xbox, you know, Project X Cloud maybe made the splashiest entrance because Xbox, you know, was trying to tie it into everything that they're doing marketing-wise with Game Pass and PC Game Pass. But, I mean, NVIDIA was really doing it successfully first. And then, of course, you know, Stadia and Luna are there being like, we're here too, guys. which, you know, they are. They're there.
Yeah, they're English words.
Everyone's trying. But I'm looking forward to seeing how the cloud gaming scene continues to evolve because, you know, is it going to make these graphics cards irrelevant?
I hope so, man. I wish I, you know, I've been trying to follow this PC shenaniganry for years. My aunt, huge PC gamer, huge into IT, like top of the food chain in IT in her department. I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I was just playing Scorn the other day and I had 18 different things I had to adjust and like sometimes it runs well, sometimes it didn't. And I... You know what I mean? Like, it's just not going to click with me ever, and I've accepted that. So let me click a button and let something else somewhere in the cloud do all the work for me and just let me live my best life. That's all I want.
Yeah, I mean, because even this one sentence from this story, the new streaming multiprocessor uses a new technique, shader execution reordering, or SIR, which NVIDIA claims provides a 2 to 3 times speed up for ray tracing and a 25% improvement for rasterized.
What the heck?
Those are words, right?
Definitely.
No, what they actually do is they grab a soup can and they open up like the little word spaghetti and then they just lift it out. And whatever words come out, that is what the press release says.
This one's even better. There are similar advancements in the dedicated ray tracing silicone with a doubling of ray triangle intersection throughput, a new opacity micromap engine that doubles the speed of ray tracing of alpha test geometry, and a micromesh engine that increases geometric richness without the BVH build and storage costs. There's also a more powerful tensor core for AI
tests.
I feel
like you just read some smut. Like, I heard mesh in there, and I'm like, okay, I feel like I'm getting turned on, but I don't know what you're saying.
It felt a little naughty, right? Yeah, I will say.
Yeah, you saw Rhee's hand go up to her neck like, hey, all right, girl, go ahead. Keep talking that tech.
Let's go. You don't say. Triangles.
I do want to give a shout out, though, to the ray tracing trailer released for the Portal RTX version that's coming. This I can get behind. Let me see if I can pull this up for y'all to take a look at.
Like that, because it's pictures, not words.
I too like picture books.
This is what the ray tracing. This is what the ray tracing is going to look like.
It's like, it's remember that old video with the shoes. Like, these shoes suck. These rule. Shoes suck. That's like my reaction to these previews.
Thank you for bringing.
But I mean, this looks good.
Oh yeah,
this looks real good.
Oh yeah, that one sucks, and that next one rules. I get it.
Right? The little neon light, the way it reflects off of that must be all that ray tracing shenanigans.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. SER technology.
Right there is a triangle.
Yeah. We're so good. Yeah, we're doing so great.
Watching, I mean, if it makes you better at footage, Portal. Just makes me once again want Portal 3. Come on, Valve. You got it in you. The guy who wrote the original even said that he wanted to do it, that it's your fault, Gabe. So
Valve, give us more games, please.
Yes, please.
Please.
We're asking nicely. All please. Right. Okay, let's continue on with the news. Just a couple more things here. Motive has announced a single-player Iron Man game is in the works as part of a new EA and Marvel collaboration. Now, you may be thinking, Andrea, where's the disclaimer? Uh-huh. And I would say, ha-ha, Marvel games are not something that my Disney-based husband works on.
We believe can't it take or not, a drink?
No, the Marvel team has their own studio. John does not work on Marvel games. But you can still take a shot if you want to.
Okay. Yeah. This is water. So
yeah, I'm all gone. Wow.
I mean, it's very naughty juice, and I'm a real cool adult.
Yeah, yes. Adult juice.
I think that this sounds interesting. My relationship with Iron Man as a character is like, he's cool.
I like the sound his blasters make. The cheer. Like, that sound is cool.
Yes.
Like, that's
Steve,
fun.
How do you feel about Iron Man as a character?
I mean, the fact that you can see Iron Man's head in the figurine I have just off camera probably should give you some idea. I absolutely love the character. It's my favorite. It's even in my Twitter bio. The thing of it is, for me, is I love RDJ's performance as Iron Man, but at the end of the day, the character is a disabled person who has a terminal illness that is going to die. His tech is slowing it down, and just the same as my medicine is slowing down my death, but it will happen, just as his will. And at the end of the day, I feel like that character is very identifiable to me because it's a character that is trying to do good in the world but continually F's up. And I feel like that's just, you know, if you're a good person, that's generally the kind of what happens is you're like, I'm going to save everybody. Oh, shit, I just got people killed. Well, you know.
Wait, who have you killed?
I'm like, are you confessing something on the show today, Steve?
Listen, whatever Britt and I do in our off hours is
hey,
none
now
of
you promised you weren't going to call me out. What is this? Sir?
Keeps dragging me down. You're going with me.
So, okay, what is your ideal, though, if you think of Iron Man single-player game? What do you want to see from that?
Not Anthem would be great. Just as long as it's not Anthem.
How dare you?
Like, I'm a trophic. Hold on.
Yep.
That was the closest we ever got to Iron Man flying that we've had so far.
I know. They can do better. They Hater. Can do so much better.
Fine. We're just going to let that one go. No. Okay, so not Anthem.
Not Anthem.
Do you have anything positive to contribute to this conversation?
That was positive. Thank you very much. I'm trying to tell them where not to go. I think it will be fleshed out. I mean, it's by the makers of Dead Space. You know, that was it's a cult classic. Everybody who loves horror loves that build. I think they're going to go down the same kind of single-player story path. They've already said it's not going to be multiplayer. I think, you know, if they do it right, it'll be on par with Spider-Man, where it has an open world that is controlled. You can't go literally everywhere, but you'll have things to do, and you can get in with the character and in with the lore of the world, and hopefully it'll bring in, you know, people who aren't necessarily Iron Man super fans like I am to understand the story, and you know, maybe I'll have less people being like, why do you like that guy the most? So,
who's saying that? Who doesn't get that Iron Man's cool?
Do you not remember the whole Iron Man versus Cap thing that Marvel did and it divided the internet? Oh. And like, yeah, man.
I guess. I don't know. I always recognize that both of them are cool.
But Team Iron Man, for sure.
Yep.
Well, yeah, sure. Yeah, agreed. Yep.
Thank you. Read your checks in the mail.
Wonderful. Well, we'll hopefully get more news about that at a future date because it was really more of just like a, hey, we're making this thing, and that's that. In case you missed it, Brittany, I hear that there's a Resident Evil showcase happening next month.
Did you have to take a drink before that?
I was having a drink while I'm getting ready to use my vocal cords. Yeah, there is. And this is exciting because I know nothing about it. So I get to go into it and like be surprised with everyone. So yeah, so TGS, Resident Evil had a little bit of a presence there. We got to read some impressions from folks who played Resident Evil Village on PSVR 2. Apparently, Lady Dimitrescu looked fantastic. I've read some mixed reviews on how the game actually played on PSVR 2. Worth remembering, this game was not built for VR, so of course it's not going to be like a perfect experience, but that's still some ways away, so I don't have to worry about that. We also heard a little bit about Shadows of Rose, the DLC that is coming out October 28th. This follows Rose Winters, Ethan's daughter. We're going to get about 4 hours of content from that, so that should be exciting. Also, Capcom confirmed that this is going to wrap up the Winters' involvement, you know, like immediate involvement into the series, which I think is a pretty interesting choice. One I am very behind. I think they served their purpose. Now they can go live their best lives as weird bio mutant human things, whatever they are. Cool, let's bring in some of the OG characters. We don't need to create any more characters. Capcom, you have enough to work with. Where's my Jill Valentine? Where's my Claire Redfield? Please bring them back. Thank you very much. And then, yeah, so we have this Resident Evil showcase, and Capcom said, and I quote, "We can expect news and updates on Resident Evil Village Gold Edition, Resident Evil 4, and more." So the Gold Edition is Village with three pieces of DLC. You have your third person mode, you have your Shadows of Rose, and then you have your mercenaries, some new characters like Lady D will be in there. I am expecting that we're going to see more gameplay from Resident Evil 4 Remake. I think we're going to get some pre-order bonuses, and I think we're going to get a demo. As someone who knows a little bit about how these showcases are run, I think that's kind of, you know, the shtick. Show us the gameplay, show us the pre-order bonuses, show us the statue we're going to get, and then give us a playable demo. I imagine it will be on PlayStation because that's just the way they roll. And probably we'll see something on Resident Evil RE-verse, which is their multiplayer game where you get to play as stars of Resident Evil and some of the most well-known enemies, and you get to battle it out. And it was supposed to come out a while ago, but it was delayed. Yeah, so anywho, that's fun and exciting, coming sometime in October. And that's kind of where I'm at with it. I think it's just mostly going to focus on Resident Evil 4 and like those things I mentioned. And I'm going to hopefully be able to stream it and react with everybody. But we're going to be out a lot in October, so who could say if I'll be around?
It's true.
I love it. It's true. When Brit goes full Resident Evil nerd. It's the passion that pours out of her about horror games.
Yeah, you were talking about Dead Space earlier, and I was over here clenching my butt a bit because I'm replaying the first one right now, and I'm like, oh, it's so good. Love that game.
It's been a hot minute since I've gone back, but you know, I have no doubt that you will keep us abreast of everything happening with Resident Evil.
Yeah,
Brittany.
Yeah. You know, I know I'm not usually super consistent on that, so I'll do my best this time around.
Yeah, have you ever considered like being a horror professional, like, you know, specializing in those kind of games or anything?
I thought about it, but I didn't want to pursue it because you wouldn't partner up with me.
No, I am a big scared baby. No, I will not.
Between you and Rhi, I just can't find anyone, you know?
What am I, like, chump change over here?
You're easy. See, I know you're down to ride, so it's not fun to give you shit. I gotta give shit to the people who aren't down to ride. That's how this works, you know what I mean?
Every six months, like, freaking clockwork, Britt will send me a message on Twitter and be like, we haven't hung out in forever. Let's play horror games. And I'm like, haha, no.
Let's play some Phasmophobia. What could go wrong?
Yeah, but aren't you better at Phasmophobia than both of us?
I wouldn't say the words better. I would say that I've been desensitized through enough trauma that I can now play it.
So you're braver.
Yeah. Oh, no, again, the word braver, I don't know about that. No, my community made me play Phasma for an entire week as a sub goal, and then the following two weeks afterwards, I slept with a light on because I was like, this is in my brain now. So
you won't get mad at me if I leave you in the house like Andrea does.
We did try to kill Andrea that way last time, if I remember right. So,
So you did attempt murder. Got it.
I was out first. Britt closed the door behind us. That's not my fault.
I'm used to being left behind by Brittany. She always leaves me to die a ghostly, gruesome death.
It's just I tend to hang out by the door so I have an easy escape route, and you're a balls deep in the upstairs, like, in the farthest
bedroom. We have objectives to accomplish. I'm trying to earn more than just $5 a trip.
Girl, was extra $10 going to be worth it if you get a cold reading? Bang!
I mean, maybe. Depends on how many cameras I need to buy for the next ghost hunt.
I miss playing that game with you.
We should play it. They put out a big update.
And it's getting close to October.
Yeah, once it in is. October, there's a there. Big customization update where you're going to be able to make the game be whatever level you want it to be.
Oh.
Well. I guess we'll just have to set a date then. There was one last story, just a quick in case you missed it, that we could probably talk about this for a while. We're not gonna, but I just want to mention that there was a story that came out because Brittany mentioned VR. PlayStation has been talking about VR. Some news broke during Tokyo Game Show where PlayStation confirmed, so Sony Interactive Entertainment confirmed that the PlayStation VR 2 headset that is slated to be released in 2023 is not going to play original PSVR games. It will only play games from PSVR 2. And when I first saw this headline, I was like, that seems like a really bad decision to make. And I understand from a technology standpoint, their reasoning is about the way that games have to be designed for the new hardware. But I think we're just so used to platforms being cross-platform for these last few generations that this idea that PSVR 2 isn't going to be able to play the old PSVR games is kind of a head scratcher, especially since the library isn't that big and the adopters for VR is still relatively small compared to the general gaming audience. I was just kind of like, why'd you make this choice?
Money.
No, but like, that's the thing is they're leaving money potentially on the table.
I imagine it.
By not being able to sell old games to people who will buy the new hardware.
I'm not a maker of hardware, but I imagine to make games compatible, to make the PSVR 2 headset compatible with the first PSVR, that they probably would have to spend more money per unit in order to make that a thing. And they're like, why would we do that? Mm-hmm. Where we can just sell a whole new headset and all new software to people, suckers. I don't know. I'm just shaded right now with Sony. I think some of the things that their spokespeople are coming out and saying is really stupid, and this is another stupid thing that they said. Love your games.
So how do you really feel though, is my question.
I think he's
I totally I just completely missed everything you said, Steve.
You were thinking about how much you hate Sony and you just couldn't.
I hate them so much. I did that keynote with Microsoft, so now I'm just fully committed to Microsoft, and I'll never ever.
Xbox Brit is what they call her in the
streets. Yeah. Do you have some issues that you would like to discuss here on the show, Brittany?
Oh boy, this is turning into something I didn't anticipate.
Oh, let's go.
So, in case it wasn't clear, Brittany is being facetious. Oh, yes. She's joking, sarcastic for everybody listening, being like, what's happening? If you're listening to the podcast and you can't see Brittany's facial expressions, I think what Brittany's getting at is that she had to deal with some feisty internet commenters who have clearly mislabeled her as an Xbox fangirl, expert? Which she is, Xbox. Of course. Hmm. Ooh, was that expert. Something that somebody
no,
threw
but
at you?
I feel like I should embody that person.
That's cute.
I'm thinking like an X-Men suit, and you got like the little X-Men patch on your shoulder. I like it.
Yes.
I also like Nintendo Brit.
I like that. See, and Sony and Brit just don't go well together. You know, it's just.
That's true.
Also, yeah.
What? Brony. It's right there. It's right there.
Oh.
Brony? Yeah.
Even though I know that Brony is the name for a subculture of My Little Pony fans on YouTube. But.
Oh, yeah. Very serious.
Yeah, thank you, Andrew, for the disclaimer, because I know there are some people out there who are going to probably listen to this and be like, oh my God, Let's Get Games is so biased. Go away.
I mean, we could definitely make a clip completely out of context.
And it would be great. Think of the clicks we would get.
I will just gently remind all of our viewers and listeners that Britt's deep-seated love of JRPGs means that she has a long, long history loving Sony as a platform.
Yeah, look behind me. Most of the games featured are Sony. It's fine. Yeah.
So I think I just wanted to bring this up as a story because I think it's important. And talking about technology and hardware, it's different. Most of the technology that we're seeing is intentionally cross-platform, and they are intentionally not cross-platform. And from an R&D perspective and a technology perspective, I understand it, but I still think it's very not a consumer-friendly choice to make it so that the new hardware is so advanced that all of the work that was done on the platform before it, which was all very innovative stuff, is not going to be able to be played. It's just going to essentially be relics locked to that system. Like it's like 2001 or something.
Choice.
I don't know.
Yeah. Bad choice.
Passing along the cost to the consumer seems to be a pattern.
I mean, obviously, I'm not a developer. I don't know what goes into developing, but I do kind of feel like, didn't we already kind of learn all these lessons when we had to retrofit all games to work on the 360, and we went through that whole thing where you had to be able to play backwards compatible games? Because the industry basically, well, the gamers rose up and said, you know, hey, that's not cool to spend $100 on a game and then I can't play it anymore. Like, we've been here before.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
Well, only like three people play VR. So.
Damn.
Hey.
Well, they did sell millions of units. I think my point, though, was I get that VR games are unique and that they require very different types of technology, and the way that you build a VR game is different. I get that. I was hoping for a different outcome, but it is what it is. At least they're being clear about it right now before the unit has launched, because if this is a story that debuted right around the launch of PSVR 2, I think it would be a much different conversation we're having. So,
and that audience is also used to paying a premium for their experiences. So I can see it going over a little bit more smoothly because, as you mentioned, Andrea, the messaging is clear and it's upfront. So that is helpful.
Indeed. Well, that is going to do it for our news for this week. When we come back, we're going to talk about what we've been playing, including some previews from one Brittany Grombacher. Stick with us, everybody. We'll be right back. This episode of What's Good Games is brought to you by HelloFresh. With HelloFresh, you get farm fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and seasonal recipes delivered right to your doorstep. Skip trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. That's why it's America's number one meal kit. Now, do you have a packed schedule this fall? Maybe you do. Maybe you got lots of video games, or you got play dates with the dogs, or maybe you have kids like I do and you just got a lot of stuff going on. Making meals can really interfere with you getting out there and enjoying your life. But HelloFresh has got you covered with a weekly selection of over 30 recipes and over 70 convenience items all delivered to your door. You can enjoy the freshest fall flavors, unlike forest floor flavors. I know what you're thinking, everybody. And every HelloFresh recipe includes ripe, just picked produce that travels from the farm to your door in less than a week. Now, HelloFresh isn't just for dinners, even though clearly that's what we love them for. You can also shop HelloFresh Market for a quick breakfast, wholesome snacks, and even desserts. You're going to find everything that you need to satisfy your cravings without stepping foot in a grocery store or a mini mart. And I've talked before about how this time of year they've got those pumpkin spice cinnamon rolls. Ugh. Delicious. You can even customize your meals with Hello Custom by swapping proteins and sides, or upgrading to different proteins, or even adding protein to a vegetable meal. It's never been easier to eat your way. I love HelloFresh. We've obviously been talking about them on the show for literally years now. And just this week, we got a crispy prosciutto and penne recipe with a pasta cream sauce, and oh, it was delicious. And I'm already thinking about crispy prosciutto again, which is just bacon, everybody. It's just bacon. Anyway, if you are hungry like I am, go to HelloFresh.com/whatsgood65 and use code whatsgood65 for 65% off plus free shipping. That's HelloFresh.com/whatsgood65 to try America's number one meal kit for yourself to get 65% off plus free shipping. And don't forget, when you use our code and our URL, they know that What's Good Games sent you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code Spotify for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back, everybody. It is the second segment of the What's Good Games podcast, where we talk about what we've been playing and any preview events that we've been to. And Brittany, it looks like you got to play quite a few things that you teased on the episode last week, and now you have all of the information. And I saw a tweet about squelching.
Lots of squelching. Yeah, cool. I've done. It felt good. This was my first. I mean, unless you want to count PAX, my first preview event since 2020. So Square Enix, yeah,
wow.
I got to go play some of their stuff, notably Crisis Core, Final Fantasy VII Reunion, Star Ocean, The Divine Force was there, and a whole bunch of other titles, but definitely want to talk about Crisis Core. And then I also got to play the game that Rhee is the most excited about, her potential Game of the Year 2022, Scorn.
Oh, you know it.
Scorn. She's very excited about it. She's excited for all of the squelching. And now, Rhee, I understand that you've done some research into what squelching is.
I have, because I took a very academic approach to this word in particular, because we were referencing the word squelch in other contexts, right? Not in gory, bloody, horrifying nightmares. And it didn't feel like it fit. So here's the actual definition of squelch. This is from Oxford Languages. So in a verb tense, it is the third person present, squelches, past tense squelched, and it means to make a soft sucking sound such as that made by walking heavily through mud. And it could also be used informally as forcefully silence or suppress someone. Now, the noun format of squelch, plural noun squelches, it's a soft sucking sound made through applying pressure through liquid or mud or flesh. And in electronics, a circuit that suppresses the output of a receiver if the signal strength falls below a certain level. And its origin is from early 17th century, originally denoting a heavy crushing fall onto something soft. This is an educational podcast, you guys.
He's sitting out. See, blink if you need.
Just that you said the soft sucking sound multiple times.
This is the definition from Oxford Languages. This is serious academic information, okay? We have to take this seriously.
I don't know what you're expecting, Steve, when you join our show this week, but you're welcome.
I'm fine with everything. Everything's absolutely fine. Thank you for asking.
Yeah.
I first became acquainted with the word squelching through the captions in The Witcher on Netflix, because turns out there's squelching in literally every episode of The Witcher on Netflix.
The Witcher loves a good squelch. There's a lot of squelching in that storyline.
It might be the only one.
Very squelch
saw
heavy.
Saw the white text in there that said help, but I was ignoring it.
Oh no, it's now red text.
He's just joking, everyone. He's fine. He doesn't need help. No one needs to come to his rescue. Wow.
Oh my gosh. Now it's blinking. Well, okay. The reason why, Rhee, thank you very much for that academic lesson on the word squelching.
It's good to learn together.
The real reason we brought it up, though, is because Brittany watched some footage.
Did you play?
Okay. Well, let's take a look at some of the B-roll I have for Scorn.
Okay, so Scorn. Yeah, this is that fleshy-looking game that's been teased since, 2014. So this game, I think, is a timed exclusive for Xbox Series X and S, and it's coming to PC, not coming to last generation, developed by Ebb Software. So I'm just going to read the Steam description because I feel like it does it more justice than I ever could. It's an atmospheric first-person horror adventure game set in a nightmarish universe of odd forms and somber tapestry. It is designed around the idea of being thrown into the world, isolated and lost inside this dreamlike world. You'll explore different interconnected regions in a non-linear fashion. Each location contains its own theme, story, puzzles, and characters that are integral to creating a cohesive world. Cool. All of that sounds great. And then you actually look at the setting of this game, which is inspired by H.R. Giger, and I'm going to try my best to pronounce this properly, Zdzisław Beksiński. Sorry, it's a very complicated name, but I did my very best. So if you're wondering, what does that mean? So Giger's most distinctive stylistic innovation, he did the Xenomorph and Alien. So he designed that. So pleasant. And
yes, that's
super
word,
cute.
That's the word that that's the word I would use. Steve fully leaving and just putting up the
Steve,
word
you come
help.
Back, baby. It's just going to get so much more squelch-erific.
Oh, well, you don't want to keep watching this beautiful gameplay from
great.
This.
Yeah, so Geiger, he was all about the representation of human bodies and machines and cold interconnected relationships, biomechanical. And I had to look all this up because I was like, who the hell are these people? Very famous people. And then you have the Polish painter, Beksiński, who created disturbing images showing a glooming, surrealistic environment with detailed scenes of death, decay, landscapes filled with skeletons, deformed figures, and deserts. So, cool. Now I've really painted a picture here. So you wake up in Scorn as, like, this fleshless human in this weird-ass setting full of pulsing flesh and other effed-up stuff. And you just kind of wake up, and the game's like, okay, go! And you know nothing about where you are. There's no UI. You have a pause screen. And you just essentially have to wander around and figure out what the heck is going on.
Ew. This is just... It's so gross. If you're watching with us at youtube.com/whatsgoodgames, this is a new gameplay trailer. And I'm just like,
everything is essentially made of, it feels like, organic material like flesh and muscle. Things are pulsating a lot. And it was really interesting because I just started up the game and again, had no clue where I was supposed to go, what I was supposed to be doing, what the point of anything was. And you just have to start running around and finding buttons and pushing buttons. The first thing I found of note were cart tracks that I could manipulate. And I'm like, okay, well, this is probably going to come into be some semblance of important at some point in my life. But like right now, it's not. I'm just going to keep wandering through this pulsification, squelterific atmosphere. And then I found a switch. And then I ran. And then I went up this huge lift. And then I found all of these pods that were lined up against a wall, which looked like probably hundreds of yards away from me. And then I found a button to my left and I pushed it and I saw that it operated a crane. And then I found another button to my right and I pushed that and I found that I could actually manipulate the pods in the order in which they're in. And only two of them had a faint glowing light coming out of it. So I said, okay, well, I probably have to manipulate these and move these in such a way that the crane will grab it and then squeeze whatever's inside and probably a piece to this puzzle that I'm trying to figure out. Yeah, sure, it was some human in there. A humanoid thing. I don't know what it was. It was in this trailer that we're watching. Disturbing as all hell. And that's essentially what I was doing as I was just playing the game, looking everywhere, trying to figure out what it is I'm supposed to be doing. And from that standpoint, I really thought it was interesting because it reminds me of an escape room, almost a very fleshy escape room, if you will, where it's just like, okay, go on, like figure this out. And as you're playing, you're kind of trying to piece together what is going on in this area. What is, like, I don't even know what that is. That's disturbing looking. What is the point of all of this? Why was this created? Obviously, this game is not going to be for everyone. I think the premise of it is very fascinating in the sense that, again, like, you don't know, you got to figure out what you're doing. And I think that would be more attractive to more people if it didn't look the way it did. But again, this is the developer's vision of it, because it did remind me almost of being, again, an escape room and almost like a very fleshy Zelda dungeon, because that's what I love about that is you just get thrown in and it's like, okay, figure out what you got to do. Is this game gross? Now, this is good. Again, a lot of squelching. So there is blood and there is gore, but it's mostly, I found it to be more unsettling because it's not like you're walking around and things are just squirting blood at you all the time. And, you know, there is some disgusting stuff, lots of like weird organic pulsating, fleshy, muscly looking shit. So, I mean, if you don't like that, obviously you're going to want to stay far, far away. You know, like the hand switches or the buttons I was talking about earlier, they're not just like little red buttons that you push. Oh, no, they're like holes for each one of your fingers that you have to stick each finger in, and each one squelches as you do. It's like...
Oh my gosh, every time I cut back to Steve's camera, it's just a new hilarity that's happening. Yeah, no, I mean, the way you're describing this sounds utterly uncomfortable and discomforting, and yes. I am concerned that people are seeking out these experiences.
You know? Yeah.
Steve is really helping to brighten the mood.
I will say, I don't know if it was because I'm not used to playing a game like on my monitor because I had to play it on Steam. I did definitely start feeling a little nauseous. And for me, that's a lot because, I mean, you know what kind of games I love playing. It doesn't really faze me, but something about this definitely kind of got under my skin. And then it went away within like 20 minutes. And then I was back to pulling levers made out of muscle tissue. It was great. Yeah. And then towards the end of the demo, I got this gun thing. I think this might be that we're watching on YouTube. It reminds me of one of those boxing toys you had as a kid where you pull the trigger and like a boxing glove like protrudes out and then you pull it back in, lock it into place, you push it and it protrudes out again. And I just used that to knock some bitches around. And nothing like major. I did get a health bar at some point. But yeah, it's a very interesting game. I never, ever have played anything like it. Definitely, it's not afraid to go places, as I'm sure you've come to learn. So
it sounds to me, based off your description, that it feels, the way the action unfolds, feels sort of similar to what Elden Ring did, where you're just kind of dropped in the world and you're not really given any guidance and you don't really know where to go, what to do. You just got to explore and figure it out on your own. Would you say that's similar?
Yeah, definitely, but it's not this huge world, right? It's just you have this main chamber. In my demo anyway, I had this main chamber and then some branching rooms and then some switches that did certain things. So you kind of just have to go around and press and touch everything and then just see what happens and then kind of put together your own story. So I think, again, the premise of it, I love. Obviously, just where a lot of people are going to be turned off is just the presentation. It's utterly fascinating, and it's one of those games that makes you stop and think, like, who thought of this? And it, while very disturbing, I do think it's fascinating that the human mind, for some people, is capable of coming up with stuff like this, stuff that is just so repulsive. It's just like, wow, like, you thought of that. I never in a million years would have thought of that. And if you like that kind of mind fuck, like, maybe this is also that sort of game for you. But anyway, yeah, that's Scorn. That's Scorn, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, cats and dogs. Cool. Definitely not a Ree game. Definitely not an Andrea game. Absolutely a Steve game, but, you know, that's for him.
I really want to be able to play this. I guess this is the best way to say it, because I love the mystery. Yeah. I love, you know, getting dropped in and trying to solve puzzles and figure out what's going on. Games like Escape Academy are like right up my alley. But like straight up, even just one of the things you passed by in that B-roll that we were playing, if you're not watching on youtube.com/whatsgoodgames, it was literally like an open flesh wound that just like flopped out at you. And that literally made my stomach move. Like, I don't enjoy that at all. So I'm wondering if there's even a world where I could like play or even watch someone play this. I don't know. I wish I could. I do. It sounds fun. It sounds interesting.
I'm going to be really curious to see how I do with this game long term. I'm curious enough about what this game is even, like what's happening in it, that I want to go back and play. But after about an hour 15 of playing it, I was like, okay, I'm ready to step away from now and like play something a little bit more lighthearted. It's just one of those things. So we'll see. But Scorn, yeah, coming out this October, ladies and gentlemen.
Less than a month away now. Wow. But a game that's a little bit further away that I think you're probably a little bit more excited about. The game that I don't know where it fits into all of the Final Fantasy VII games that are apparently coming out. There's like five of them.
Good time to be alive. Yeah, so Crisis Core Final Fantasy VII Reunion. The very first sentence of my notes is all of the daddies, because there are a lot of daddies in this game and they're all very attractive. Okay, so I played this demo 4 times. Bless all of the hearts of the Square Enix staff, because my flight took off way later than I thought, and so I had a lot of time to kill. So I played this demo 2 times on PS5, 1 time on Switch, and another time on PS5, but in Japanese. So I'm very familiar with it. So this originally released in 2007 on the PSP. And then in June, oh my God, look how glorious this is. In June, during the 25th anniversary of Final Fantasy VII, we got the announcement that we're getting the remaster. Very important to note, that remaster of Crisis Core Final Fantasy VII. So for those of you like Andrea, who are like, what the hell is this game? So this game focuses on Zack Fair, who plays a very, very important role in Cloud's life. And from the looks of it, into a large role in the Final Fantasy VII remake, because we see him making an appearance in the latest trailer, which is pretty mind-blowing. But that's a whole rabbit hole that I don't need to go down and go into. All the narrative just isn't worth it at this point, but there will be a spoiler cast, mark my words. So what is in this remaster? You have HD graphics, new 3D models, a newly arranged soundtrack. The story is pretty much the same, but because this is part of Remake and this is the prequel to Final Fantasy VII Remake, you gotta expect that we're gonna get some certain scenes that are gonna play out quite differently from the original in 2007. Of course, I asked the fine folks, I was like, yo, can you tell me about the story of this game? And I got a generic BS PR response, which is expected, but I had to ask. So, and you're also going to get a lot of the voice actors are returning for this, because a lot of the characters from the remake are in this game, including Cloud, Sephiroth, Aerith, Zack, of course, and it comes out in December. So, for those of you who want to know, my demo started off at Fort Tamblyn and Wutai, and it ended right around the time I met up with Sephiroth. And again, not going to talk too much about the story, because everything I saw is pretty much beat for beat. as it was in the PSP version. Again, I do anticipate that will change, but I don't have any information on that now. They weren't gonna tell me anything. So the thing that I think is really important to talk about is I want to set proper expectations for this game. I think when it was first announced, a lot of folks were thinking, remake. Definitely, this is a remaster. It is not going to have the same visual fidelity as the Final Fantasy VII remake because it's just not. It's not really rebuilt from the ground up. Although you are getting the new 3D models, you do have the new lighting, and I think it looks really good. It's not, you're not going to get all the polish of the remake. The animations, I think, you can't really tell in this footage, but when you're watching cutscenes, a lot of the animations, facial animations, the movements just look really stiff and pretty outdated. An example is like when a character's turning, their whole body just moves instead of, you know, like the step and pivot. That's a lot more natural. Mocap does not exist, right? That's kind of what I'm getting at here. And then here we're looking at combat, and this is obviously something that a lot of people care about. You know, you attack with square, dodge with X, guard with R1, you have a target lock, the camera follows you. So it definitely is a lot more smoother than the original PSP game. On the bottom right, you have your materia and your items you can access. The one thing that I think a lot of folks are going to be scratching their head about that aren't familiar with the original one is the digital mind wave that's in the top left corner of the combat. So you can think of this like a slot machine that's constantly running. And as you land certain combinations, you're going to get certain buffs. Maybe you'll get a limit break, which will give you an attack that you can use at your leisure. If you hit 777, you'll level up. Maybe you'll hit a combo so you don't have to, so materia doesn't cost MP or certain attacks won't cost AP. So that's going to be like kind of the funky fun thing. It's just like a permaslot machine with your favorite characters running in the top left. But it's a part of combat and it's like, whatever, it's cute. I guess the other thing I want to chat about, because again, not going into the story here, is the voice acting of this game. So obviously, like, I never want to come across as rude or insensitive when it comes to someone working on their craft. Like, that's never my intention. But because this game is fully voice acted now, there are a lot of lines that I feel like just come across, they feel a little forced, especially in English. If you go back and watch the PSP version, I think the lines that were voice acted were done really well. I just rewatched a replay or a let's play maybe like a few weeks back just to kind of freshen up on it. And I still thought it sounded really good and Zach sounded perfect. But in this remaster, I thought it just seemed a little almost like cheesy. I don't know if cheesy is the word, but Zach is such an enthusiastic in the beginning, I almost want to say naive character. And just some of the lines like, I get to meet a hero. It just didn't sound like supernatural. So then I did do a demo in Japanese. And like, of course, the enthusiasm that comes, you know, with Japanese voice acting, it just seemed so much better.
So you're just saying that the dub isn't quite what you had hoped it would
be. And it's hard because I only got to see a snippet, and compared to the PSP version, like, I thought the PSP version was way better, but again, not everything was voice acted in PSP, so that might be why there's kind of like a hyper focus on that. So just again, setting expectations that, yeah, that's all I want to say. But the TLDR is, I'm excited this game exists. I'm happy we're getting it as a little bridge between this and Rebirth. I'm really excited for people to get to meet Zach Fair, because again, very, very important character, and Andrew, you in particular. Like, I hope you play this game. I think it'll provide a lot of interesting context.
Yeah, so I think it would be helpful for me and maybe other people out there who, like me, never played the original games and only have recently gotten into it because of the Final Fantasy VII remake. So narratively, where does this game line up with the second game, which is now called Rebirth? It's not Episode 2, which is what we thought it was going to be, right?
So Crisis Core Reunion takes place right before Final Fantasy VII remake, the first one.
Okay, so everything that happens in Crisis Core is like a prequel to the events of Final Fantasy VII Remake. Okay, that's good to know, because I did not know that at all.
I mean, it's hard, right? Yeah, maybe they need to do a better job at that, because Zach plays such a small role in Final Fantasy VII Remake, and if you don't even know who the black-haired guy is at the end, you're like, cool, what's the importance of this? And we've talked about this, right? Of a lot of the most important, hard-hitting moments are lost on you if you're not a fan, if you didn't know what you were looking for, if you'd never played before. So even though he's such an important character, his appearance is very brief. So yeah. So is it going to be integral that you play this game? Like, I don't know, because I don't know where Square's taking Remake and Rebirth or what role Zack's going to play. But it sounds like right now, like, yeah, I would highly recommend you give it a shot and see if you can get into it. And if you can, wonderful.
Sure.
Yeah.
Listen, I will give it a shot because I was very surprised that Final Fantasy VII Remake became my game of the year that it came out. And I don't think any of us saw that coming. And I am interested to see more about, you know, kind of more about the narrative and what's leading up to it. And if the combat is even sort of like Remake, I could be convinced to try it. But it feels like it's more turn-based, or is it more action-focused?
I mean, yeah. You run around, you push Square to attack, X to dodge, and then on the bottom right, you have your materia, which are your spells, and you have your items. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so we're good. That sounds great.
Yeah.
I'm in.
Woo!
I'm in. Let's go, Crisis Core.
Let's go. And yeah, if you're into those characters like Aerith and Zack and Sephiroth and like all that, like, you're going to want to play it. You know what I mean?
All the daddies. Well, Steve, do you have some contributing information about the daddies that you would like to share?
You know, I am an equal opportunity daddy lover. I think that all the daddies deserve to be loved. And, you know, as an equal opportunity daddy person, I feel like it's our duty to make sure that they are all loved equally. Back to you, Andrea.
What a professional.
Nailed it.
So diplomatic.
Is there anything else from the event, Brittany, that you want to go over?
Yeah, you know, I'll save it for next week, though, because there's a lot to talk about. And yeah, next week.
Okay.
Let's do it next week.
So we'll put a pin in the rest of the Square Enix preview event that Brittany went to. Again, if you want to check out some of the footage that we showed.
Sorry. I want to say one more thing. Real quick. The game ran amazing on the Switch. Of course, there were some, like, graphic, you know, like, it looks a little grainier. I'm sure there's a more technical term for that. But, I mean, I never had any frame hiccups. It never appeared to slow down. And I wasn't even playing on an OLED version. It was the OG Switch. So if you're thinking about playing it on the Switch, I can't recommend against it because it looked really good. Yeah. So, and it ran wonderful. Viva the Switch. Good job. A little machine that could.
Excellent. Well, just quickly, I want to talk about this game that I played on stream with Steve the other night because I had never heard of it. And Steve texted me and was like, hey, we're getting together for my birthday. We're playing this game called Tabletop Simulator. And I was like, okay, so is this a tabletop game? What is this game? And he was like, don't worry about it. Just install it and play. And I was like, all right, you're the birthday boy. Let's play. So let me see if I can pull up Steve's stream from the other night so you guys can see what this game is. But Steve, how would you describe what Tabletop Simulator is?
It's literally just a simulator that allows you to play just about any tabletop game that you can possibly imagine. Dungeons & Dragons, or, you know, Fall of Winter, or checkers, or chess, like anything in between. It's pretty much a great way, particularly during the pandemic, that we found ways of staying connected by playing board games together when you couldn't get together virtually. It's also a great way to include someone like myself who's disabled and can't actually physically move pieces in a video game setting, like on a piece stand. So one of my favorite ways of staying connected with friends by just enjoying a good game of board games.
I love the idea of this. And now that we've played it, I'm like, okay, I'm down to do more. So the game that we played was called Muffin Time.
No.
And here's, Muffin Time. It's Muffin Time. Okay, so we'll explain that in a second. So this is showing some B-roll of Steve's stream, twitch.tv/Steve in Spawn. So that's I-N, Steve in Spawn. We'll put his link in the show notes. If you guys want, please go to his channel, drop him a follow. He streams all the time. He invited me to play with some of his other friends. And so this is kind of what the game looks like. We're sitting around this virtual card table and we're playing essentially like a card game where everybody is dealt a certain amount of cards, 3 cards, I think it was, to start with. And the goal of the game is to get exactly 10 cards in your hand, at which point you shout, "It's muffin time!" And then you have to get, the play has to go around the circle one more time, and then if you still have 10 cards in your hand, you win the game. There was some debate about exactly what the win conditions were. Just like everything in this game was debated. So these cards on the table are three different colors. They are blue, green, or red. And the blue cards are action cards, the green cards are counter cards, and the red cards are trap cards. And they all do all kinds of different things. You can see one of the cards that Steve is holding here is called the pointless card, and it literally has a pointless button on it. And on it, it says this card does nothing. So when you play it, literally nothing happens. Like,
yeah, there's a lot of good points. Like, there's trap cards you can put down, but you put them down upside down so you can't read them. And it can be something like, you can put this card anywhere on the table or anybody playing it, and if they touch it, then they have to pick up 10 cards or something like that. Like, it's 100% messes with you. But the wording is intentionally vague so that you have to sort of argue and debate over what the card really just said.
Oh. That's interesting. It's so I want to know, though, how many times did you get to yell at Muffin Time, Steven?
I don't think I did the entire night. Andrea got to yell at several times. I made her do take twos a couple times because I was like, no, Power Ranger style. Try again. So.
I accidentally yelled, "It's Muffin Time," the first time because I thought it was 10 or more cards in your hand.
Yeah, this is so embarrassing. When you Muffin Time and it's not Muffin Time.
It was embarrassing for me on his live stream having to be like, oops, my bad. It's not actually Muffin Time, everybody. JK.
Muffin's not done.
It's a really fun game because there's a lot of opportunity for, you know, joking around with your friends and laughing. And obviously, as Steven mentioned, the debating over, like, what does this card actually mean? And some of the cards are really chaotic, so you can really turn the tide of play or really just upend play. Like, I had a card. It was like a call me crazy, and the directions on the card were everybody returns all of your cards to the deck and you shuffle and start the game over.
Oh.
That's great.
So basically, like, it stops all play and the entire game just starts over.
I love that.
And it's like, do I want to play this or do I not? And before I joined the game, you guys had been playing for what, 2.5 hours, yeah. 3 hours?
We ended
almost?
Up playing for 5 hours. Oh, Andrea ended up having 2 or 3 drinks, and it was good.
Oh my gosh. So there was a moment where I just broke. I was drinking the cookie dough whiskey.
That is so good. I can see how you would have had a lot.
And I had like 3 fingers of it in a glass, and I was nursing it / drinking it probably too fast. And I was a little tipsy, and I don't remember what it was that set me off. It was probably something really mundane, but I just got into a laughing fit where I just started crying. I was laughing so hard. And I was like, thank God my camera's not on. And Bruce Green, who was playing with us at the time, was like, are you okay? And I was like, and I'm like laughing, crying. So it probably sounds like I could be crying, but I was just, I couldn't breathe. I was laughing so hard. I don't even remember what it was that was so funny.
I don't think any of us do. We were all laughing about it because it was like, oh, she finally got a chance to let her hair down. Good for her. It was definitely one of those nights like you have the baby is with the sitter and you can just be goofy. It was fun. It was good content creator friendly. It wasn't, you know, it was just not typical streamer content where you're just interacting with chat and being nuts. It was literally just like 5 to 8 of us just being goofballs and literally screwing each other over with no purpose other than just to keep the game going. And nobody ended up winning after 5 hours. So, you know.
Well, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Several times people drew the "It's my birthday" card, but I don't think, Steve, you never actually had that card.
Nobody actually gave it to me so that I could win. So I was like, damn.
Oh, I thought Rude gave it to you once. Did he not?
He played it instead of giving it to me. And it was, and that's when we had to get lawyer hats out because it says it's your birthday when you play it. So it was good content, though. It definitely is a fun game if you just want to have some fun. There's a physical version of it as well. If you're looking for, you have 3 or 4 friends, you want to be goofy for a while and not actually win a game, then I highly recommend it.
Have lots of situations where that would apply.
It's muffin time! So I noticed on the left, and then you get on to that gameplay that you were showing, that there's all those tools there. Is that for you, Steve, or what? Is that part of the game, or what is it?
It's for anybody playing the game. So you have tools where you can grab cards, you can throw them around, you can flick them across the room,
oh,
you
fun.
Can make little tokens, pieces, draw on the table, and people draw dicks, and it's great.
Oh, great. Say no more.
Yeah.
Ooh, I feel like there may be a stream coming in our future.
So you
with
can
this
get
game.
Angry and just throw all your cards on the table.
There actually is a button at the top there. If you saw it, it says flip the table. It literally flips the entire table.
Oh, I see that. Oh, amazing. How fun.
Yeah, I that feels a little too much chaos, but you mean, I guess you could flip the whole table.
The great thing is you can flip it, and then there's a rewind button, so you can just like bring it all back.
Oh, okay. See, there we go. I'm into it.
Control rage.
But we had a great time, and it was really fun. And you were also playing Fall Guys, of which there was an announcement that I told my husband that we would talk about because they made an announcement. Let me look up the details. Yep. Get your shots. Get your shots ready,
yeah, that's
everybody.
Because of What's Good Games is John Drake. Disney would fail without the What's Good Games podcast. Every week he whispers to Andrew, he's like, if you don't talk about our new announcement, I'm going to divorce you and Disney's going to fail. And so poor baby girl over there, she's stuck. She's beholden to this agreement mm-hmm. that she's just kind of found herself forced into. And I really feel bad for you, Andrea.
Well, don't feel too bad for me because, you know, somebody has to pay the mortgage on this house and it's not me. Take a shot, everybody. We're talking about xenomorphs. Yes, aliens are underneath my husband's Disney purview, which is a weird thing to say out loud. The team over at Mediatonic and Fall Guys announced that xenomorphs are in the season pass for Fall Guys, which is so weird. Like, why would you want your Fall Guy as a xenomorph? Steve, do you have any favorite costumes when you play
the
Fall Guys?
Season pass is all about sci-fi. So it's like the xenomorph, and you got Spock, and you have the cat. So they have like a cat suit where you're an astronaut with the little ears as if it's a cat helmet. Mm. But do y'all remember the movie The Abyss from like the 90s, something like that?
Nice.
There was this like pink goo that they were learning to breathe through if you filled your helmet with it. So that's exactly what the suit is. It's got the pink goo. So you can't actually see what the little Fall Guys look like, because that's like the lore, is that we don't know what they look like underneath their little bean suits.
Ah.
So you can't see it through the helmet. So it's pretty cool. I run Cat Gang over in my stream, where I just yell out Cat Gang and people yell it back with their suits on. It's pretty fun. But Fall Guys is just such chaoticness. I'm on the opposite end of the stream with Britt. I want less stress in my life. Britt wants more gore and weirdness. I always want silly fun. So I've been on such a big kick of Fall Guys and Fortnite and anything where if it's low stakes, you can just play the game, and then if you lose, you lose. Who cares?
That's fair. You know, that's a good way to live. You know, it would probably do me a lot of good for my mental health if I'd play more games like Fall Guys instead of Scorn and Resident Evil. But hey.
We have to get into some Fortnite then, you know, because Ree has been on a Fortnite kick.
Yes, I have. I almost filled out my last season pass, and unfortunately, I forgot to go in and cash in the rest of my V-Bucks to fill out the last page
before
it flipped over. But I was all the way to the second to last page of the bonus pages, so I was very pleased with myself with the progress, regardless.
Impressive. Impressive. But a game that you are spending, it feels like, more time with currently is one that came out just about a month ago and had the internet whipped into a frenzy and is sitting on my Switch waiting for me to play. Cult of the Lamb.
Yeah. So I was out of town, as I mentioned, with my husband, Danny Pena. We were back in Miami for his big book release for the start of Hispanic Heritage Month with Danny Loves Video Games. And that entailed lots of travel. So I had plenty of hours on the plane and sitting in a room waiting for sound check and just sitting at someone's house waiting for them to cook dinner and lots of time with my Steam Deck. And I installed Cult of the Lamb and started playing once I took off. So as of right now, since I started this time last week, I have about 60 hours in. And I'm on day 80 of my cult.
Nice.
Right now I have 11 followers alive because one of the heretics in the dungeons actually just turned one against me and I had to fight against them.
Terrible.
Which sucked because it was one of my favorites. And altogether I've had 18 followers over the course of my game. So it's great. And I will say what I really love about Cult of Lamb so far, it's like my favorite parts about Animal Crossing with my favorite parts about Hades put together in one game. Everybody who listens to What's Good Games knows how I feel about both of those properties. So it is highly addictive. Like, if we were to have a category for most addictive game, this would absolutely take Fortnite's crown, because I swear to you, the loop is so, so tight. I could either spend a good 12 hours straight just hanging out with my cult, or a good 5 hours straight just running dungeons or fishing or playing the little gambling game that's inside of Cult of the Lamb. Like, it is just so easy to be like, okay, while my people are sleeping, I'm going to do a little farming and then get the poop from the outhouse and then put it over here and then run over here and fish a little bit. And then when we get back upstairs,
get the poop from the outhouse.
Get the poop from the outhouse. And then when I call my...
It's a cult leader.
Yeah, exactly. And I call my cult, it's Cult of Dance, but I call it going upstairs. I don't know why. But when I go back upstairs to hang out with my people, then I'll just do a quick little fishing ritual, then go fishing again. And once that's expired, then I'll do a little fasting ritual so nobody poops while I'm gone. And then I'll do a bunch of dungeon runs. Like, it is so easy to get caught in these loops. And my goodness, what a satisfying game. I absolutely adore it. It is top of my list for game of the year.
You know what? Me too. I haven't talked about it on What's Good, but I'm probably like 30 hours into Cult of the Lamb. I haven't picked it up in a while. But something I also loved about it, Rian, you touched on this, is that whatever you're in the mood for, you can do. If you want to decorate your cult and put down a whole bunch of new pathways or decorations or torches or whatever, you can do that. And then when you get bored of that and you want to do some dungeon runs, you can do that too. You can just take your time with it. And I love games that let you do that because you never feel rushed. You never feel like you have to do a certain thing. You can just make it whatever you want to make it. And there's lots of choices. Like, you can run your cult, like, in a very dirty and nasty way where everyone just kind of, like, hates you. Or you can be a, kind of a nice cult leader, which is the route that I took. But I could definitely see myself going back and just being a complete a-hole. You know what I mean? Are you being nice, Rhea, or are you just, like, telling everyone go kick rocks?
I'm being fairly nice. I do slightly regret that I did not take the doctrine that allowed me to murder.
Yeah.
Because sometimes people are annoying, and I'd rather just kill them than trying to convert
them. Oh, and it's hard because then you have to wait till they get old. Older, and then you can do a sacrifice because everyone's like, oh, cool, death is cool. You know, there's lots of different interesting ways you can play. And yeah, the loop is great. This is really funny. Andrea, I think you'll like it. I think you'll have a good time with it.
I definitely think you'll like it, Andrea. And there's way more decoration in this game than the B-roll gives credit for, as Brittany mentioned.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, I clearly need to start Disney Dreamlight Valley, but I also need to start this. Just take a shot, everybody. And I'm like, okay, I have to do both. I must play both of these games. How do I get a time turner so that I can go back in time and make time in the day to play both of these things? Because I don't know how I'm going to do it.
I'm not sure if we're on a time crunch here. So if I am, just feel free to answer really, really quickly. But I was curious, you ladies being the forefront of gaming podcastery, do you have opinions on the loop cycle that we're kind of seeing now where... Stardew Valley was very, here's start A, here's the end point B. If you want to keep going, you start a whole new day. But we're seeing things like Dream Valley and Cult of the Lamb where there really isn't a logical place to pause. It's kind of like you could go forever if you want. And it seems like games are moving that way to where there is no logical stop. It's just stop when you want to.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I've played those sorts of games my whole life, starting with Harvest Moon on Super Nintendo. And what tends to
The life sims,
and what tends just to happen to me is there's an organic point when I just start to peter out, and I can usually tell when I'm about 5 to 10 hours out of that hitting that wall, and it's usually when I feel like I've mastered the game, where I've got an efficient economy running, and there's really not much more to do. Everyone in town loves me. I can bang anyone I want, you know, like, so that's kind of my organic. I love that though, because again, like, you can just stop whenever you want and you can just pick it up whenever you want and it's no rush. So I personally love that, but I know for some people that's a really, like, it's a pain point because they don't have that definitive stop. And so you don't know, like, when have I played enough? And that's why I stopped playing Cult of the Lamb, is everyone loved me. Everything was upgraded. I still have one more, I think they're dungeons, or I don't know exactly what they're called, to do, but I just really don't have any interest in finishing it because I feel like I've mastered the sim part of it.
That's interesting with the amount of hours you've played that you think that you're like, okay, I've played enough. Because clearly for me in Animal Crossing New Horizons, that number was like 800 hours. And that's when I was like, okay, I think I've played this game enough. But it's like, it's such a different vibe because it's, you know, there isn't a lot of things to chase in these life sims. I think the idea is you get to make the game what you want. And even when you would go talk, you know, to Tom Nook, because he was the one who would give you things, you would be like, what am I supposed to do now, Tom? And he'd be like, just go live your life and enjoy being on the island. And it's like, what's my purpose? I think it's interesting that we're seeing more life sims. We talked about how there was such a surge in life sim announcements during the last Nintendo Direct, and I posed the question on Twitter, is it because Animal Crossing New Horizons sold this crazy amount, you know, over 35 million copies, or is it because there's just always been this many life sims and I just am now starting to see them and care about them more? And a lot of people in my timeline said column A and column B, that there's definitely more life sims than there ever has been. Part of it is because Animal Crossing did so well that people are like, obviously we missed the market for life sims and Nintendo has it cornered. Let's, you know, get a piece of it.
Yeah. I mean, I would guess that as many games as we've seen recently have been pitched forever, but they've gotten greenlit because of Animal Crossing. And, you know, there's a lot more faith in that format. But to help answer your question, I think for me, I really love games that let me choose, as Brittany alluded to, what part of the game is the game for me, right? Like, for me, it's like hanging out with my people upstairs. Like, I just love my little cult. I love adding people to it. When people start getting weird and like, I want to eat poop, I'm like, you gotta go. Like, no, dude. Like, you know, like, I just love managing my little group of people. And I'll do my dungeons to get stuff, like to get different materials in order to upgrade my surroundings, or in order to cook a new type of meal, or in order to build a new type of building. That's the only reason I'm interested in running dungeons. I actually am not interested in in-game and the actual story of Cult of the Lamb. Now, I'm not saying it's not wonderful, because it is actually really great. The characters are super, super interesting. The NPCs you meet are really, really quirky and have lots of fun dialogue. Like, there is that game for the person who's looking for that there too. But for me, I just want to hang out with my little weirdos. And that's just what I find exciting about the game. So I can see, similar to Brittany, me tapping out before I probably finish it, or, you know, unlock all of the dungeons or get to the end game and beat all the heretics, simply because, like, what I'm getting out of it is enough for me. You know, I don't need to get to end game in order to have enjoyed my time with it. And it is still at the top of, like I said, the top of my list for game of the year. But I think it's just really great that as gamers, we have so many games that give us so many choices. And even within one title, there's so many ways to play a lot of these life sims as well.
And I wrote in the show notes, I just love my little cult.
You want to eat poop?
I'm going to put it on a t-shirt.
Yeah.
No poop eaters. Poop eaters are not welcome in the cult. Let it be known to everybody. Well, this has been really fun talking about some games that are coming out, some games that have been out. And Steve, I want to say thank you for joining us today. I would love to hear more about what you're playing on your Twitch channel and where people can come hang out with you and play video games.
Yeah, I mean, I do so much in the community games area. We do our Fall Guys community nights and our Marvels on stream. And, you know, I actually have Andrea to thank, believe it or not, for where I turned in my Twitch career, because we were talking one night about variety streamer and how it didn't really fit me. And Andrea was like, you're more of like a personality streamer. And that really stuck with me. And since then, that's what I've been kind of calling myself, because I don't really play games to be good. I'm not really playing on OnlyFans. I'm just hanging out, you know, being a guy.
Dang.
No OnlyFans. Sorry,
but apparently you can. That's the new hotness.
I'll be your first subscriber.
Let's go. $3,000 a night.
Ooh.
And just kidding.
I'll take the $3,000 a night. Anyway, so I'm always on Twitch just trying to have fun with people. And so if you want to come by and hang out, you know, twitch.tv/Steven Spawn, spelled the streamer way. Pretty much over there, we're always just being goofballs. So I love people to come by and hang out. You know, one of my favorite things to do is hang out with friends, even though Andrea yells at me that we don't have to always stream everything. I think it's always good to play with your community as well. So that's where you can find me. More often than not, it's usually on Twitter as well.
So I had messaged Steve after we had this really fun night and just reminded him, you know, like, it was so fun to play. We don't get to play enough together. We don't always have to play on stream, so we can be a little bit more off the cuff. But I think also it's about balance. And right now I want to get back to streaming more while I'm actively talking to Steve. Maybe, you know, you could stream a little bit less and take more time for yourself, because you're clearly working really hard and I don't want to see you burn out. You know, circling back to that burnout conversation we had at the very top of the episode of, you know, we all, as people in the spotlight, even if you're not a content creator, this pressure to be on social media or to be posting online and to be taking pictures and photos and be out in the world doing stuff, I think has been really tough for a lot of us in the aftermath of being so isolated for so many years during the pandemic. And getting back to it is a little bit rougher, I think, than maybe we were ready for. I think at first I was like, all right, I'm all cooped up. Let's go. Let's go. And then I was like, oh my gosh, the pressure to like, you know, go out and socialize is really way more tough than I thought it was going to be. It's hard sometimes to find that balance.
Well, thank you again for letting me plug my stuff and Spawn Together. If anybody out there is a content creator or just wants to donate to the cause, spawntogether.com is my passion project to help people with disabilities. But Andrea usually reminds me I don't have to be working all the time, so I'm just here hanging out playing games. But to circle back and push back to all of you listening to What's Good Games, when Britt read out that review, please keep in mind those reviews really do help. As all the ladies here, I'm sure, could tell you, they do the same. You get every once in a while a message that says, hey, I really love your stuff. I'm sure you hear this all the time, so you're probably sick of it, but I love when you did this. And every single time I go, no, I don't hear that all the time. Actually, quite the opposite. Most of our DMs are full of feet pics and hate. So anytime you want to leave a review somewhere, it helps more than you might realize. So if you feel something good about something you love, I highly encourage you, put it into the universe. Talk about what you love. You don't have to only talk about what you don't like.
Oh, yes, we're all saying snaps, preach, amen, 100%. I had just mentioned that, talking about what all the people that got laid off in the awful news that we got last week for the multiple gaming media websites that, you know, suffered layoffs, this like idea that, you know, making stuff, whether you're making content or video games or specialty video game controllers or software, whatever it is, it's hard to do and it's usually pretty thankless. And so if you like somebody that does something that you consume, no matter what it is, tell them you like it. Tell them you appreciate that they put time into it. And you'd be surprised by how much it's going to mean to them and how much it's going to make their day. And like Steve said, it does not happen as often as you think it does. But we are happy to always support you, friend. And even if that means forcing you to play Phasmophobia with us.
Yeah.
Yes, that sounds like an amazing idea. I definitely want to play more games in that one.
Your comedic timing is too good. It's unfair. Have you been getting lessons from your pal, Ryan?
Yeah, he just comes to my house every weekend, tutors me. I think that's what you mean when someone feeds you bread. I don't know. Anyway, it's really... It's really just a skill. Gotta hone it, you know.
All right, well, I'll take my polisher out and get to honing. Everybody, if you want to check out all the sites that Steve mentioned, we've got the links in the show notes for you. Please do go check out Spawn Together. Go to Steve's channel, hit follow. Your tweets are wonderful. If you want to follow him on Twitter, we have that down there as well. And we hopefully will be setting up a stream for some time in the not-too-distant future.
It's muffin time.
Oh. There's like my medicine laugh.
Muffin time, muffin time. I want to eat poop.
Well, now that the conversation has devolved into this, we're going to go. Thanks, everybody. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you next week. Bye.